see my vest made from real gorilla chest. Feel this sweater, there's no better than authentic Irish setter. See this hat, 'twas my cat, my evening wear, vampire bat. These white slippers are albino, African endangered rhino.
Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. See my vest, see my vest, see my vest.
Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
Well, we are two males in their 30s. So, naturally, this weekend we watched the new...
Another Harry Potter episode!
No, more gay. This is Beauty and the Beast, the live action remake, which I assume that you saw with your wife and small daughter. Is that correct?
Yes, a 3.5-year-old small daughter and my wife.
And my dad. I went with my won't say age, early 30s wife, not also small. Not as small as your daughter, but small in her own way.
Well, yeah.
Right off the bat, what did you think of the movie?
I really, really loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I definitely had some, reservations going into it. But most of those were unfounded. And I think the original 1991 film, I wasn't super close to it as a kid, but I can't deny that it's one of the high water marks in Disney feature animations for so many reasons. One of which being the music and the lyrics of the musical numbers, and that's one thing that obviously this movie skates by on the success of that in some ways. But also the way that they stage a lot of those musical numbers in this film is something I wasn't expecting. The first musical number with the small provincial town, I forget the name of the song, Bonjour, maybe?
Yeah.
The way that was all staged on like a real set with these like intricate camera movements, you know, moving in and out of people's faces, I was like, well, here we go. Like this is how a big budget movie musical should look, you know. Later on, we get a lot of CGI enhanced characters flying around and stuff that it was interesting in its own way and in terms of how abstract it was getting. But in terms of like just like movie magic, it didn't have the same feel as that opening number. But yeah, whenever they were interweaving visually all of these different characters, introducing Gaston and Belle and LeFou and the camera moving in and out from one plane of action to another, I was like, well, wow, this is impressive stuff. I haven't seen Dreamgirls, but I assume that, you know, Bill Condon probably brought a lot of the skill from that musical over to this one.
Yeah, you know, I've always, well, the last few years, actually, when I rewatched Beauty and the Beast, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and I've rewatched it since within the last year or two, as you can imagine, having two young daughters. But I've rewatched it like 5 or 6 years ago, I've always been curious about what a live action Bonjour would be like, because it's so just everything as you described in the animated movie. And I thought, wow, it could be so cool as a live action with many people just kind of all running around in a small area, but sort of in a small town, I guess, but just running around singing like that. Different folks in and out doing different things, but it's what they do every single day. Completely new to us, but something that they, it's just like clockwork they do. But I thought it was great. I thought the art direction of that set, those sets in that town were really, really great.
Yes, I loved how her house was kind of like nestled up like on a almost like a opening of a stage, you know, and it was like in the back corner of the town. And then like once you pull back from that, it's like that's like the center of the proscenium of the whole set and everything like that. So the way they've got it all laid out, and you like it immediately clicks like the geography of it, you know, so that later on in the movie with Kill the Beast, all those numbers, you're like, I know exactly where everything is because I've been shown. So
yes, that's a good point, because right beside her house is a little pathway that she leaves the town from.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And then and it's sort of her house, wherever it may be in with respect to the front or the side of the town, I don't know, the opening gates or whatever. But right, you walk out of her house and down a little bit, and there's all the things you need. There's the pub, and there's the center of the town. But I think there's so much detail to all this stuff. Like, for instance, you walk out of her, down her little pathway, and there's, like, grass, and there's, like, a garden, but then there's, like, all kinds of stuff, and you can't take it in. And it's not overload, but it's
Yeah,
and it's something that me and my wife were talking about afterwards, and you notice this, too, in the castle later, is that there's so many things that I know I'm going to pick up on a second viewing that I miss just because there's so much detail to it.
Yeah. So here's we've been nice. So we've been the beauty. Let's be the beast. Maybe, I don't know. That detail. Intricate detail where it's like, wow, I can't keep up. I can't look at all the things that there are to look at. Like you said, it's not overkill in the design and the castle. It feels like everything is so rich. It just adds to it. However, I do feel like they bring a lot of that design to the CGI characters so that you can't ever really make out what any of these people look like. And specifically Lumiere, I think, is the problem there. It just feels like there's, like, if you asked me to do a quick sketch of Lumiere from the cartoon, I could come kind of close. But if you asked me to do a sketch of Lumiere from this movie, which is, he's an animated character. So, like, you have to use some of the same principles of in terms of, like, simplicity and those things. I wouldn't be able to. And I think it's a common occurrence in these movies where you have to make it look real, but you also have to make it look fake because it's a talking lamp or candle. And there's this whole rule that I think Guillermo del Toro uses when he does creature design is that it has to have a silhouette. It has to have a precise silhouette so you know from the get-go, oh, this is what I'm looking at. And so if you look at all the monsters in Pacific Rim, all of them have a particular shape, and so they stand out in your brain immediately, and you can tell who is what or what is what. And I feel like that's something they're missing here, is that they made these CGI characters so detailed and so intricate that they became objects. You know, they became design props. And at the end of the day, I can't feel anything about a lamp. But, you know, if you anthropomorphize it in the way that so many great animated films do, then I can. So you have to bring out those common, simple human face shapes that make us empathize with one another. You have to bring those in to a greater degree with those characters. So basically, anytime anybody but Cogsworth was talking, any of the creatures, I was pretty tuned out. And the only reason I think I do think Cogsworth was pretty good because he's a clock, and clocks are a little easier to make faces out of. But also, it was Ian McKellen, so like I immediately listen whenever he speaks.
I didn't even know that was. I didn't know any of the actors for the inanimate objects. I wasn't really trying to figure out anybody's voice really. That was one thing when I saw the trailer. And I saw how the kind of design they were going with for the inanimate characters. I was really like, man, it was a nagging in the back of my head. I was like, man, what little I saw of this, I'm worried about. I get what they're trying to do. It's a live action. They want the cups and dressers and things to be live action, which is, you know, more power to you. But that cup, the pot in particular, the cup and the pot, to me, in that trailer, I was like, man, that doesn't look good. And then Lumiere as well, I was kind of like, But then when I saw the movie, I was that was one of my reservations going in, and it was completely alleviated. I had no problem with it. But I do understand what you're saying about being able to picture that in your head. And Lumiere, I think he's dark. It's just dark. He's always in a dark setting.
And the movement, like when they start doing the Be Our Guest number, and all of these things are moving around and talking. That's when it started feeling an awful lot like a Transformers movie, where it's just these similarly colored blurs just going around on the camera.
Screen. Yeah, I kind of like that, because, you know, that number in the animated movie, it's kind of like there's little sections of those throughout some of those princess movies that you probably full on know, since you've seen every single Disney animated movie and others. But
except there's like Big Hero 6.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a lot like the animated movie in that regard, where the plates sort of fly in like concentric circles
No, I'm not saying that the abstract quality of it didn't work for me. I'm just saying like the actual lighting. You know, I like the arrangement.
He's always in a dark setting, and his design is always dark, even when he's lit.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. His hands and head are light. There's no reason he should have been underlit.
Right. And Lumiere in the animated film is gold, bright gold.
Yeah, glittering, yeah.
I mean, I didn't have a huge problem with it, but I do agree, and one of the nagging things was that, it's hard to see it's hard to make out an animate element to these inanimate objects, because they are or were human, and they will become. One thing I do think they did an excellent job of, though, at the very end of really, and maybe it was too late, but it worked for me, of really letting you know that these inanimate objects are actually people's, when they all like started to, they all started to freeze.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is if they were more anthropomorphized from the get-go, I would have felt that more. And in that moment, all I thought of was, well, he's already mostly a lamb. he's not losing much. I mean, it was a moment. It was a good moment. I don't want to totally undersell it, but I feel like it could have hit me. There's a moment in Brave, which is a movie a lot of people crap on, but where they basically signify this loss of humanity in this bear, with its pupils going from, you know, cartoon white and black to dark black, like a doll's eyes. And like that in that movie, that's so effective, because you see somebody's humanity falling away, and I feel like that's kind of what we needed here. But because I never really totally got wrapped up in their humanity, it didn't do a whole lot for me.
Yeah, you know, and they all go outside to do it, and the sun is coming up. So perhaps if it was like in a desolate, dark, destroyed, with all these, but they were just dying. There's another one, alone in a dark castle, maybe. But yeah, no, I agree. I think the overall effect worked well for me, despite my reservations going into it. So I was actually pleased, but no, I totally get what you're. It does seem like let's let this automata run out of, you know, wind up, instead of, oh no, these humans are dying. It's like, right. this constructed robot is running out of, you know, circuitry or what have you.
Yeah, this faceless thing is talking less.
And
the last kind of major nitpick I'll go with is something that as a friend of mine, Ian, who mentioned it to me. Well, first of all, he said that the studio approached Bill Condon and they didn't really want to make it a musical, which that's ridiculous. He's told me that Condon wanted the Beast to be entirely practical makeup effects. And the studio ended up, I can't tell if they shot it that way, and then they like in The Hobbit, they CGI'd basically a character over the makeup that they filmed. But I feel like that was a pretty big mistake. Regardless, even if they never shot the prosthetics, they should have done that, you know? And I mean, I guess I can see the argument against it in terms of, boy, it's a lot easier to make things look consistent if it's all CGI. And I'm not totally against having CGI elements. Like, if you have to put this dude on stilts in a mocap costume to get, like, the fur to look right on his body, I'm okay with that. But, man, spend the 16 hours in makeup and do his face right, you know, and make sure that when you have a close-up of this thing, that I want to feel the same way I feel in Legend with Tim Curry's makeup in Legend. Or, I mean, just recently, Hellboy. Again, I bring up Guillermo del Toro. I feel like he gets these things.
Well,
like,
yeah, he's...
How?
Yeah,
why
he's
did in, they get to... Like, why did they do it and it worked so well? And then we have to CGI this thing where I feel like I'm... And it's, again, he's so... there's an uncanny valley thing happening there where it's... I'm not buying for one second that this is a real person. They nail the eyes. I feel like the eyes are the important thing, and obviously they cut to a close-up of that whenever he turns human, which I really like.
So now we know Zemeckis is not involved.
Or Peter Jackson at this point. That was the major bummer of the movie for me. It's like, man, you had the opportunity to, because he was very well written and well performed by
Dan Stevens,
the guest. Yeah, Dan Stevens, Daniel Craig,
Matthew.
Matthew, I don't watch that show. Yeah, no clue what you're talking about. But yeah, he was in The Guest. And he's Daniel Craig adjacent. So, but he's good. So I like the approach of the script approach to him. And in fact, all of the performances I think in the movie were fantastic.
Yeah.
So, but that was my only other big like.
You know what I thought was a really cool added twist on the situation of the town and the beast.
Literally.
They were all partying with the prince, the townsfolk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the enchantress calls them to lose their memory at the beginning. Belle says, "Have you forgotten something?" And the baker or somebody goes,
right.
"No, it was one of the guys." No, yeah, but I can't remember what. Like, bam! Like that, off the bat, a tiny hint that I didn't pick up till well after when my wife told me. But it's a well thought out, well foundationed. New twist to this plot here that actually, when you're trying to make this into a longer live action film, you need a little more.
Yes.
Stage.
You need some more specifics to make plots work when you're not in animation. I think that is a fair assumption to make about audiences, that we can accept way more leaps of logic and narrative. Jumps in animation than we can in live action. So I feel like I agree, and I think a lot of the stuff they expanded in terms of Gaston is a war hero, but he's also like he's got like a Hurt Locker thing where he is an emotional attachment to war, and he's trying to suppress that the entire film.
So you saw it as him trying to impress it. I saw it as the film, they want to make him likable enough to where we laugh at him, where we kind of like him in a way while he's singing, you know, No One, whatever, like Gaston.
Yeah.
And while he's, because he has some really funny moments, and the guy that plays him is likable, and the character himself is likable, but at some point, they make him, like, really, really evil, and it turns on a dime. And I think they risk having that likability or at least that attachment between him and the audience if they make him a little more bad in the beginning. But I felt like that turn to evil happens way too quickly.
I read it as because LeFou talks to him and says, like, when I think happy thoughts, like, you know, remember what's at stake here. It's like he's conning everybody, and the only way he can do it is to – you know, suppress the side of himself that's always been there. And he still might not be able to help it, but that doesn't stop him from acting on it. So that's how I read it. And I liked that. And I felt like Luke Evans, I think, played that nicely in his, in his performance in the opening act of this guy that's like, man, he's really putting on a face, and God bless him for it, but it's just not going to work out because he is a very violent person underneath.
So you see Gaston as someone who's pretending to not be as evil as he is.
Exactly.
Can't do it for very long. Okay.
Yeah,
I see it as
Jeremy Renner at the grocery store.
I see him as Gaston from the original film, just completely self-involved.
Cartoon. Yeah.
But another thing that makes him more likable is that they mention that he's a vet. He's a captain. And so it's like, well, how do you dislike someone that's been to war? And I think that may add to the confusion or the struggle in, you know.
Well, you can dislike them for going to war if they went to war because it was an excuse to kill people, which is
something that
does happen.
I guess, but I feel like these days if you say, oh, you know, it's not like the war or something like that. You're like, oh, they've been through a lot. They fought for their whatever.
Not the assumption. It's certainly not the assumption to make is that people went to war to kill for joy. But I'm saying that is documented. I mean, there have been cases of that happening in recorded history of, you know, sadistic people using war as an excuse to kill other people. This is an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Again, hey, look, support the truth.
I have no notes on this, but
okay. Yeah, let the takeaway be that I support the troops and Gaston was a lone wolf acting in his own interest.
Let the record show that I agree. I just think Gaston sort of goes off the hinges and he's not really putting on
sure.
face. But at any rate, LeFou exonerates himself halfway through by not being completely on board with tying Bill's dad to a tree. But what's he going to do? You know, it seems to be acting more out of fear now than, you know, wanting to, you know, be friends with Gaston, I guess, but.
Right.
Yeah. So now we have the Gaston number. Did you enjoy?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. They expanded it with lyrics that weren't in the original. That's just one of the they built up all of the big moments, the expectorating moment. It was just a lot of fun. Again, great set designs.
Yeah. Yep, totally. You know, I think another thing, and this isn't a criticism of the film, really. It's the guy that plays LeFou, who is also Olaf in Frozen. I think we see here, in my opinion, I could have a bunch of people disagree with me, assuming a bunch of people are listening to this. Anyway, he's not a great singer, is he?
I don't know.
I don't think they're making the character have sort of not a great voice. Maybe they are.
I mean,
he came to
fame in the Book of Mormon, which is a musical. So I think he's got a pretty good voice. But
well,
you still think they're maybe
voice, but
either they're downplaying it for this?
I don't know. Either that or it's because, you know, his one number in Frozen is sort of a cartoony, really over-the-top kind of. Mm-hmm. Maybe they are. I don't know, but they could be because he seems to be a – maybe not shy. I don't know. That one's conjecture. I can't really say for sure. That's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, I didn't. My wife brought up the comment that she thought that Luke Evans got the vocal precision down a little bit better than Emma Watson, but I didn't really see that. I felt like everybody here did pretty well, but you could. I think you definitely had that strain that you often get in these movie musicals where the people are actors primarily. You know, you got it in Les Mis. But I never really have a big issue with that. I feel like there's a naturalism to somebody that doesn't sound like Paige O'Hara from the original animated film, who's clearly like a trained opera singer or something. Maybe that's what you're talking about. It's just kind of that natural... maybe live so. Action strain. The different, you know, the difference between performing with Olaf in a studio and the difference between performing on set when you're moving around.
That's exactly right. Now, did they record the sound like they did for Les Mis?
Where it's all on set?
Yeah.
I think they did. I think there's a big dialogue going on right now. This is like a perception of a thing, I think, is maybe somebody saying on Twitter, maybe, I don't know. But I think there's a bit of a kerfluffle right now about, hey, maybe we should get back to post-syncing movie musicals where they, you know, where they milli vanilli on set and then, you know, they go back in and ADR everything. Because I think for the most part, things are recorded on set now. I think most people do it the way that Tom Hooper did it in Les Mis. But I may be, I love that. I think that, you know, I believe it. I believe it, and even, I believe it even though, like, you know, people are singing about their lives in song and the town is moving around all around them. You know, as long as a human being is emoting realistically, you can put them anywhere and I'll believe it. And I feel like that's what helps. And I think if you put another layer of artifice over that where their voices are enhanced or just sound too perfect, then it's just going to disconnect me more. And I feel like it's post-syncing sound and post-recording sound is something that, you know, classic movie musicals did a lot more because they had heavier equipment and had less control over the elements and over the film magazine and all that stuff. And so that's a charm of that age, but I don't see any reason to think that we need to go back to the artifice. I don't think we need to go back to the artifice of those times if it was just there for pragmatism, you know, if it gets in the way of naturalism. But, you know, that's, again, I'm voicing my opinions on a controversy that I know nothing about. But yeah, so overall, I really like the movie a lot, and I think it's a step up. It's probably my favorite of the Disney live-action films so far, quote-unquote, around live-action for The Jungle Book. But with any closing thoughts you got for us here, Craig?
No, just to add, I thought Emma Watson did it. That's one where you can tell she's not a singer, but she's, you know, an actress doing a musical, I guess I should say. But, man, I thought she did a really great job. And I only say that because we were talking about, like, the overall sort of essence of the voice, not like an actual trained singer, but one that she does really well in this movie, I think. And it does feel like you can tell it was recorded on set and maybe souped up later. But yeah, I thought she did a really good job considering she's not like a singer per se.
Yeah, I think so too. And in general, I think that this is, I think, the first kind of major leading part in a movie that I've seen her in after Harry Potter, and I think she did really well, and I think she's going to be around for some time. You know, she's not going to be one of those child actors that kind of, you know, disappears. I think she's a full-on movie star at this point.
So I guess this was another Harry Potter podcast.
It did. Well, I think Daniel Radcliffe may have been originally rumored for the Beast or something like that. So that's all you and I will talk about.
Oh, man.
We should review Swiss Army Man in that case.
Okay.
That's basically a Harry Potter sequel.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking to me about this, and I'll see you next year for the Home on the Range live-action remake.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, speaking of, sorry to cut this off, but which are you excited about any oncoming live-action films?
Nope. This one was good. This one was good, but I have no real need for it. No, they're making Mulan and not as a musical, which I think would be awesome. I think that has the... I mean, because that's been a movie in other ways. You know, that's like such a famous Chinese legend that, you know, it's less that we're remaking Pocahontas. Good Lord. Wow, what a find. It's not that we're remaking Mulan, it's that you're adapting this great story, you know. So it's another adaptation of the Hunchback of Notre Dame here or something like that. You know, it's this classic work.
Well, I think there are. I would even be excited if they were doing the music too. There's a couple of really good songs in there.
I like those songs, but I don't think the movie needs it. And I feel like the movie. There's so much political and historical stuff going on there that all the singing time needs to be used, I think, probably for contextual times.
And I feel like it's poetry.
I don't know. I just feel like it should be a badass war movie. And
I don't think it's musical. Yeah, I don't think it needs it either necessarily. I would still be excited for it though. But no, that's a good point though. That time could be spent really, you know, getting into the characters and the story and what have you. Because yeah, that's a really cool movie.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a good one.
Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.
Of naturalism, but you know, that's again, I'm voicing my opinions on a controversy that I know nothing about, but I like the way they did it here, so I think it sounded great. Hey, Craig, are you still there? Well, thanks for listening.